everyone, and welcome to
Let's Clear the Air
with Jess and Kaylee. We are so, so excited to be bringing you this weekly podcast talking everything from mind, stories, relationships, families, and everything in between. We really, really are so excited to be bringing you this every week, and we hope you are too. Hello there. Don't know why.
Hello, darling. We are back.
We're back. It always feels really weird doing this because we've talked for like 15 minutes. So to then suddenly be like, hello there.
The joys of podcasting.
Yeah, exactly. How are we?
Very well, thank you. I always want to talk about this because lately I've been feeling really good and I've been dealing with stresses really well. And I know I've been in therapy for the last couple of years just because I think everyone should have someone to talk to. And I feel like this is now our therapy.
Yeah,
but I've just noticed a change in myself, whereas things that would normally make me panic and fly off the handle aren't, and I've been noticing that for a good few months now. So this week, you know, I've got the house moving, trying to sort out, find somewhere to live, blah blah blah, all that stuff that comes with it, and actually I'm handling it like a boss, and it's just because I've learned to calm my systems down with
amazing
the likes of Wim Hof. I always talk about Wim Hof, I'm obsessed with him, but the breathing technique for cold water exposure. It works. This stuff really works. And this is why I like to talk about it a lot, because it does work. I'm living proof of that. Whereas my manic state before, when I was younger, I don't get in because I'm doing all these other people's, you know, the way they've learnt to regulate their own systems. I've taken on their advice and it's worked.
And maybe, like for, maybe for people who don't quite know yet what their kind of manic mode is, could you tell us kind of what were your symptoms, like what happened when you went into that kind of panic manic mode? What kind of happened in that time?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. When you went before, I wouldn't know I was even in a manic.
Yeah,
I wouldn't have a clue. I'd just be like, oh, I'm stressed, I'm this, I'm my I'd sweat, I would be heart palpitations, my mind could not, it would be flickering. It was almost like I was buzzing through channels trying to fix things through, and I couldn't rest until I'd sorted all of them, but I couldn't sort any of them because there was too many going on and it was just flicking from one to the other and I couldn't focus. It was a hyper, hyper alert to everything. And now I can notice I'm starting to go into that. It's like an awareness. And there's so many books and podcasts on awareness that I would suggest listening to if you ever feel like you're in a manic mode, or you think, oh, hang on, that sounds a bit like me and I haven't even realized I'm in that kind of situation, to read and understand it. Because the minute you have awareness of that within yourself, it's the minute you can change it, and it takes work, but it feels like amazing once you kind of mastered a bit of self-awareness and self-regulation.
Yeah. Oh, I'm so happy for you. That's great. Yeah.
How are you?
I am good. It's just, there's a lot of, I feel like I'm on a constant balancing act at the moment, kind of like family, work, you know, everything. But you know, we'll get through it. It's the same as you're saying, that it's trying to figure out that, taking time for yourself, trying not to panic in those moments where everything feels overwhelming, having those techniques, having those things there to help you. But overall, I'm good. It's exciting. It's 2022. We're moving forwards. The sun's come out, which I'm very happy about.
It's a change. I think with them manic moments and finding the balancing, we don't want to take a step back because we want to get it all done. But I think that's the moment when we need to. And that's what I've learned as well, is like when I'm in that, I can't function because everything's kind of manic, give yourself 20 minutes of meditation. And I know it sounds like I can't do that, I'm too busy, but you just see things clearer. And I've been meditating for about 3 years now, and I don't do it every day anymore. I was when I was kind of figuring myself out, I was doing it 30 minutes morning, 30 minutes evening, and it just gives you that clarity to be like, oh, okay, I'm calm and my nervous system is calmed, therefore I can actually get on with the task at hand rather than running around like a crazy person. And I hope that helps anyone.
It does. Well, big news, I've joined the gym.
Fab. Love a bit of gym. So, it's always good for the mind.
I used to go to the gym, and then it was the gym I went to, I went, and it was a lot of like people who were like four times my size, like bodybuilding and stuff like that. And I just didn't feel, it wasn't like a nice environment, you know. I just felt quite like out of my depth all the time. So now I've joined somewhere that's a bit more like family friendly, and there's another gym that's just opened, and I feel like everyone who I'd feel intimidated by are going to that gym, and so then I can just go to this kind of like nice gym that's got like a pool and stuff like that. And Yeah, no, I'm excited by it. I think I've struggled this year with some old issues, and I think that now having that and having a somewhere I can go and have the endorphins and maybe exercise to feel better about myself on the in and outside, I think that will be a positive step. Yeah,
definitely. I have to go to the gym for my mind. I've always said this, like, if I don't go for 4 or 5 days,
yeah,
I start getting jittery, and for me it's just that release of energy,
yeah,
and that bust, yeah, that just, it's not even for me saying, oh, I need to aesthetically look at this, but obviously that is a great outcome of the gym. But my mind, just every time I go and have a workout, and it's also a self-discipline that I learn from it as well. I start being able to, but not just focus on my mind's feeling better because I've let out that energy, but also, yeah, I'm like, okay, do another set, you'll feel good. And it's like that little bit of discipline that keeps me disciplined in every other aspect of things that I'm doing. And yeah, I think the gym is one of the most important, yeah, things, especially if you suffer with any sort of mental health.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I think it's finding what works for you, whether you go and you go on the running machine for an hour. Like for me, I'm asthmatic, and it sounds really silly, but I, when I'm outside running, I just can't do it. It's just the air and that, you know, any sort of is it called an incline, upcline?
Inclined, yeah.
Yeah, thanks. Any sort of that, just my chest, I sound like an old man. I come home and I'm like, yeah, trying to breathe and get the air back in my lungs, because I'm that person that I hate using my inhalers. I just like to try, and someone once said it to me when I was like 12 about they were asthmatic and using your breath, and from then I've just kind of tried to not that there's anything wrong with you using your inhalers, just a personal choice. But yeah, so I just really struggle with it, but I love kind of running and that kind of that feeling. So even, yeah, like if I go for an hour and just go on the running machine, I just know it'll make me feel 10 times better. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, I'm excited yeah, for it. Yeah. And even, like, go on.
Sorry.
No.
It could be yoga. It could be anything. It's, yeah, just moving, exactly, and feeling that energy go through your body. On the breath, I just want to drop this in. I read a fantastic book by James Nestor about the breath.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
how that actually, as we've kind of progressed as humans, we don't breathe properly anymore. Mm-hmm. And he talks scientifically about the shape of our mouths have changed to the, if we're mouth breathing, most of us, and we should be nasal breathing.
Yeah.
And it's actually smaller the size of our faces with, wow, evolution. And I won't go too into it because this is proper scientific stuff, but it's an easy read or an audible listen. It's really great. Mm-hmm. But it talks about how the breath, if we learn to breathe properly again, we're regulating our systems better because, you know, if you're in panic mode, you breathe short, fast breaths. But if you continue that when you're not in panic mode, your body's automatically responding in these ways, which heightens anxieties.
Yeah.
So if you learn to take your slower, deeper breaths, it's a fab read anyway, but I do really suggest it to anyone. And I'd love to have him on the pod one day to talk about,
yeah,
it, if you can get him on, because that was a real big change in step for me regulating my own nervous system.
Yeah. Breathing. So it's not discussed actually enough about your breathing. It's the same as any creative in terms of singing, performing, theatre, mm-hmm, things like that. You're breathing. And breathing is a massive part of us that we don't realise showcases our emotions as well. We like you just touched on, it's we don't realise, you know, as we're getting stressed or as we're feeling something, you'll find that your breath does, and you're louder, you're kind of breathing louder. Sometimes we hold our breath. I do it if I'm nervous or if I'm, yeah, say about to do anything. Same as really random, but swimming. I hate swimming. I physically don't float, okay, and anyone can I will argue this to the point with anybody. 20 years me and my parents have spent trying to get me to float in water, and I physically don't float. I don't know what it is about my body, but she goes straight down like a bag of rocks. That's what happens. And so when I swim, because I'm nervous, and when I was younger I had a couple of cases where I kind of went down in the deep water and you know, I'm not going to say almost drowned, because that feels really like over the top, but you know, I felt that effect, like I couldn't get back up. Yeah, I hold my breath, and it's mad how much breath affects us and how we use our breath to showcase emotions or yeah, basically what you said. But no, very interesting. Yeah,
it is
madness. Right, should we get into what we're going to do the episode about today?
Let's do it.
So today, guys, we are going to be talking all things men, males, and kind of what they're about.
Which I don't think I'll ever know for the rest of the time.
very confusing.
Women
humans.
Are from Venus and men are from Mars, as the book said. I got the wrong way around, but you know what I'm saying.
It's really funny, actually, isn't it? Because I do think that we are described as the more complicated human being, but I think we're only described as complicated because we showcase our complications and we showcase our emotions and our ups and downs. Whereas I think men are just as complex, however, they just hide their emotions and feelings. So we never.
Yeah, and actually, the thing about that is, it's like we, as you're correct in saying, we do tend to be able to vocalize it a bit more.
Yeah.
And I think now what's, and this is all again a construct, men have to be strong and women have to be protected. And it's this old construct that was kind of made for us all. But lately we found, you know, a lot more men are talking out. And because of that, discussions are happening and there's no more, you know, people are communicating better because they're able to speak about it. And I think men have been told for so long that, you know, boys don't cry or this. That's why men end up having, I mean, there's a lot of men that end up having midlife crises and breakdowns because they've been holding it in for so long. Whereas now with the talking, I do see a big change coming. And I think that will also help relationships of men and women, because to vocalize things is so important. And we've discussed that again on last week's pod, communication. And without that, when you've been told since you're a boy that, you know, hold it in, you're strong, you're this, the real strength is vulnerability. Yeah. Like the biggest strength you can have is being able to open up and say, yeah, this is what I'm going through, because holding it in on the outside is going to make you look strong, but on the inside you don't. And actually, even on the outside doesn't make you look strong, because if I look at someone now that's holding stuff in, you can really tell,
you can so
tell he's struggling with something. Yeah. You know, so I think we need to always keep that conversation and the narrative changing, that men should be, you know, strong and hold it together and they have to be the rock. No, let things out, talk about these things, and you know, it would stop a lot of problems. Like, we're seeing some terrible things going on in the world right now, and if people was able to sit and talk about things, it'd be better. But we've got this whole idea of holding it in and being strong and the biggest powerful man is the best, and it kind of F's everything up.
It really does. And I think that everyone has different coping mechanisms, and men I've had in my life, they tend to close up, and that is their coping mechanism, whether that's because they don't know how to vocalize how they feel, whether it's they feel that by keeping it in they're being strong and they're protecting. But it's opening that conversation, and it's as a partner or whoever you are on the other side of it, it's allowing those tools or being there for that person to allow them to open up when they're ready. It might take them years to figure out that that's not the correct coping mechanism for them, or they might allow or open up in different ways. You might find that maybe once they'll kind of tell you everything, and then you're aware of things to know how they're gonna react in the future. But I think there's a massive pressure on men, and I also think, and this is, my mum says this quite a lot, that men are expected to kind of be everything now. And I don't know if people will agree with this, but men now are expected to be in some aspects feminine and understand femininity and what women go through. They are at times also expected to still be strong men and do this and go off, as we've seen with what's going on at the world at the moment, in a way, to be brave, to in some cases still be the breadwinner or to do things. And I think it it's hard for men as much as it is for us. I think it's the same, to be honest. I think in terms of male and female, I don't think there is much divide anymore. I think that we have seen a massive fluidity in gender, and I think that the struggles that both genders feel now are on a level. I think women struggle just as much with men of trying to be everything, trying to be at work, keep a home, keep a family, keep everything going. I think that as time has gone on, expectations have just increased for people. And it's fucking hard, I do think.
Yeah. I think the hard bit from a female point of view is the misogynistic views that still go, like, you know, the memes you'll see on the internet, like kind of sexually degrading, and
it
that kind of stuff I really detest. And if I for instance, if a boyfriend shows you something, I'll be like, well, I don't like this because XYZ, I think that's misogynistic, I think this, and women shouldn't be expected, blah blah blah. And then one of my friends, Ashley James, she has a mum podcast,
yeah,
and she said one of the main things that drives her nuts is when she sees you know, oh, isn't he a good dad staying in so you can go to work? And it's like, well, aren't I a good mum? Because I, you know, it seemed like, hold on a minute, why is he getting praised?
Yeah.
Because he's had, a, you know, done this for a day and I'm just expected to. And if I do something, it's like, oh, you should be at home with your kid. So it's like, there is still that misogynistic vibe that goes around and I see quite a lot. Or, you know, like, it's even intimidating sometimes if a man catcalls you. Because I think, oh, you know, I'm not one of the people that sits and I'm like, oh, I hate that. But
it is upsetting when it happens.
Places, it's nerve-wracking. Yeah. Like, if I'm walking alone at night and I've got heels and I'm talking back home.
Yeah.
And a man goes, oh, all right. My heart starts going.
Yeah, you same, because you don't know.
And it's like, if we could open up the conversation more, you know, as I said, men are beginning to talk and it's better.
Yeah.
But open up this conversation more to these types of men that are doing that. Like, you do realise you're frightening this person. You're not, you're actually intimidating people. That is a conversation that still needs to go on.
And there's so much that's bred into us, like you were just touching upon with motherhood. Mummy guilt. You know, there's that mummy guilt of going to work and leaving your child. But I can 100% tell you that most dads don't go back to work and feel guilty for leaving their child. They might feel like they're abandoning their partner with the child because it's rough with nights and things like that. But they're not inbred to have that daddy guilt. Yet we are, there's things in our DNA and our gender that makes us have things like mummy guilt. But actually now we live in a society where one full-time wage doesn't allow for a fulfilled life, you know, the way that the government's gone and the amount that we need within a household is 2 full-time wages or more, you know. So I think that it's hard because we've gone on and we are trying to make things as equal as possible, but it is hard because I can only speak from a female point of view, but there are these guilts or these inbred things that come out. And I think, but why do I feel like that? Like, I've always felt very angry about things, and it physically upsets me, and it's not an attack and it's not anything that people that I'm about to mention are doing wrong. It's just inbuilt in them and then it's passed down. So for example, when I moved in with my boyfriend, there were some comments made from his mum which weren't meant in a malicious way, but she'd say, oh, you look hungry, or you know, are you being cooked for, or things like that. And that really affected me because it made me really angry, because I was like, well, if he's hungry, he can make himself some food. Like, he's 22 years old, crack on. But B, there was probably 5 to 10% of me that actually sort of felt guilty. There was also like, am I not providing a good enough home where he has the food to be sufficient? And I know that sounds like an attack, and I know it probably wouldn't be seen in a positive way if it was heard, but it's not meant in that way. But what I'm trying to state is that there are examples of which we feel this guilt, or we feel protective or annoyed, not necessarily in the way that they mean it, but because we feel protective, because we think, well, why should we, like, we're both the same, so you crack on. It's still inbuilt in us.
It's gone on for so many years. Like, if you go back to old war times, my nan was around. It was the she provided for the family, granddad would go out to work. It was that a lot of women weren't even allowed to work back
then.
So therefore these generational things just flow down until things start to people start saying, oh, hold on a minute, that doesn't work. People don't change it because that's just how it is. And I've got a funny story to go with that. I must have read it in a book, but it was about this woman who used to always cut the ends off her ham when she was cooking it, and it one time the husband comes back, like, why did you cut half the ham off? Oh, my mum did it. She asked the mum why she did it. And the mum then says, oh, because Nan did it. So she asked the nan why she did it. Oh, because it didn't fit in the pan we had. So they thought that was the way to cook it, because that's how the nan did it. But it wasn't. It was simply because her pan was too small. So it's like, it just shows you how things we just automatically adapt and take with us into our lives that actually have no meaning whatsoever, apart from it was just too small. But now you've got a big enough pan, but you're still doing it. Cutting off the sides. So it's just these things that we've all been ingrained in. And, you know, I'm 30, nearly 33. And so I've still got a bit of that where I'm such a provider, and I physically can't help it. Like, with my boyfriend now, I'm like, what are we having for dinner tonight? I'll cook. I do enjoy doing it. The good thing is that if I'm tired, he'll sort it. He'll go and get dinner, or I haven't tasted his cooking. I'm a bit concerned about that. But he'll go and get it from the shop, or go and get a takeaway. I enjoy providing. And I think because of my childhood, which was, you know, always trying to take care of people that were in danger or in trouble with the domestic violence that was going on, I have this inbuilt incessant need that I need to look after everyone.
Yeah.
And that's something I work on all the time, because I'm like, stop doing everything for everyone. Like,
yeah,
even if I've noticed it myself right now, is that even if he's doing something, I'd be like, oh, I can help. And I'm like, no,
yeah,
fucking leave him to do it himself. He's not an idiot. Like, just stop. And it's this, oh, and also having a blind mum and a disabled real, my real dad's obviously died in a hospice of cancer and Alzheimer's and all this. I'm so used to doing things for people. So my mum has something, I'll just to the point where I'll be, if I'm texting, I read my texts out loud so she knows I'm doing something rather than talking and then me being like, oh, hang on, mum. She's like, well, I can't see what you're doing. So I speak everything I do.
Yeah.
And that's now led into, I do that when I'm here at home with my partner. So then I will start speaking my text message and they're like, why are you reading that out? And I'm like, it's
ingrained.
So it shows you how these things pass down.
Yeah.
And you accidentally get into these habits, but it actually makes no difference to your current life now.
Mm.
Like the ham story, that's completely crazy. Like you're cutting off the size because you didn't fit and now you're cutting off half your meat for no reason whatsoever, but it's because you've grown up and seen it. So I think if we just again back to self-awareness, if you become self-aware of these things, you can start saying, oh, why am I doing that?
Mm.
And then if you have the ability to start questioning things of why I'm doing this and why I'm doing that, or why this happens, you can kind of self-pick what's not serving yourself now or your relationships now, you know?
Yeah. I think the trouble sometimes with, it's really difficult because sometimes you're put in situations where you are self-aware and you realize that actions you're taking or the support you're providing or things that are happening are maybe affecting your mental health or affecting your state. And yet you can't walk away, and yet you can't leave that, and yet you can't do anything to negate those feelings. And sometimes it's just having to help as much as you can, and then having to, I don't know, you can't always give everything that someone else might need or want. And that's very difficult when it comes to those around you, because maybe they have, I think a lot of the time as well, people have set expectations, especially generational, or maybe just, you know, your partners, their families, they all have different sets of expectations. Same with the ham story, like you're saying, but that's not the same as maybe a different set families. I don't know about cheese. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. Like everyone has their own set of rules or expectations that have been built through generations. And it's so tough because as we've been able to be more self-aware generationally, and as we've been able to know what's helping us, hindering us, what we need, what we can give, what then we can't, it can actually be different to the expectations of that person that's wanting things off of you. And then I think to pull back, it can, I don't know, it can cause issues. I don't want to go that far, but it can be hard for them to understand.
I completely get what you're saying, because that was a part of what I was doing. I was like, I'm aware now this is causing me problems, but I can't stop because I'm going to get told off, or this person's going to be mad at me, or blah, blah. But now I've learned to give myself time.
Yeah.
So for instance, if mum's needing something drastically and I'd be like, mum, I can't do it right now, I'll get frustrated because my guilt is I need to help.
Yeah.
I physically have no mental ability to do that at the moment.
Yeah.
So what I learned to control me in that process. I can't control anyone else. The only person I can control is myself. I can't control anyone else's reactions but my own.
Mm.
So I'll say, look, mum, I need a day. I can give you that time tomorrow, but I need to give myself some time today because I'm not going to get anything sorted because my brain's just not right today.
Mm.
And it gives you that freedom. No one can argue with that. If you're kind and saying, look, I am here to help you, but I need to top up my cup because I can't give you from an empty cup.
Yeah.
So therefore it gives you that bit of space and then you can go back to it. You're not saying I can't help you, go away. You're not putting a block. You're just saying, give me my time and then I'm going to have so much more for you.
Yeah.
And that's absolutely how I navigate around that one. And again, like with men, the partner, if I need that time, it's very easy to say that. And I think because I've gone into this newer relationship, unlike my others, where I'm just like so needy, not needy, I would say, like, so wanting to please all the time, that I was detrimenting myself when it was inevitably going to end. With this one, I've come in with this new kind of attitude where I can say, actually, this is upsetting me, let's talk about it.
Yeah.
And what I find when I approach something different to how I've done it before, things come very, very different. The outcome's always different. And my old self in a relationship would be, if someone's done something wrong or I've noticed something and there's been girls involved and I'm like, I can't believe you do this after everything I've done for you, and I'll be livid. Whereas now I'll be like, look, this has hurt my feelings and this is why it's hurt my feelings. Can we talk about it?
Yeah.
I would say 10 out of 10 with this relationship. That's worked perfectly.
That's great, isn't it?
There's been no things where I'm like, I can't believe you're saying that. It's been like, this is my point of view on it. Can you explain yours? Middle ground. Or if we're not going to meet a middle ground at all, is this worth carrying on this relationship? And it kind of like, it also sets boundaries, but you keep respect.
You're not
calling anyone names. You're not screaming and shouting at each other. And I think that's what I used to do because I've grown up with it. That's all I knew what to do in a confrontation. Whereas now I don't want that. I want peace and I want love and I want respect. And to do that, same. You have to give that too.
Yeah.
And for me, that's worked not just in family relationships, but obviously now in my relationship with the man. I'm like, okay, that
with a man
on this level with the man. it works on such a level that what you're giving, you then get back.
Yeah. Yeah, so, absolutely. And I think it's honestly exactly the same as that. Everyone has prick moments. We all act like pricks, either through stress or maybe we say something without thinking. Maybe we don't even mean to in a relationship. Sometimes we'll upset, we'll do an action that causes a reaction from our partner and actually saying, you saying that wasn't it, you know, this did this, it hurt my feelings in this way. How are we going to progress through here? You know, how are we going to work this out? I don't agree with this statement that you made. I don't agree with you doing this. You know, me, you know, what do you think? Me and Kieran tend to have every couple of weeks, we'll check in. We've done it. I mean, we live in together 10 years in May and we've done it since young, where every couple of weeks we should be like, how's it going? Happy? Yeah. And we can just air anything. We can discuss anything, even if it's, stop nicking my fucking porridge pots. Do you know what I mean? We can discuss it and we can, find our balance. And that's the other thing, is relationships are constant work. You can't, it doesn't just, you know, like in films, isn't it, where they have their bump and then they have their happily ever after and you go, oh, that's all right, then they'll be fine for the next 60 years. It's not, they'll reach a bump left, right and center.
And that's this is the thing people forget. They think everything has to be perfect, but no, it doesn't. What it is, our lives individually are not, there is bumps every minute of the way throughout our lives, whether it be financial, whether it be successes, whether it be health, families, no matter what, our lives will be bumpy the whole way through, and we just have to learn to ride them. Doesn't mean that life's shite. It means that life has these bumps, and it's just like anything, a road has a bump, we all gonna have it, and we just navigate around it, and then you figure out your flow with that. And it's exactly the same relationships. There will always be bumps. There will always be some time where I think, oh, you haven't done the garden and I've done this, or you haven't done he's saying to me, oh, you haven't done this, and you know, there's always going to be that, because we're not now navigating just our singular bump, we're navigating a partnership bump.
100%.
And it doesn't mean either or the other person's a bad person.
No,
it means our views on things may be different, so we've got to try and have a little work around to see what we both agree on there. And that's just life. And I think people are too quick to go, oh, I've had an argument, I'm going to go and get someone to give me attention on Instagram.
No.
It's like,
and we constantly evolve.
That's weak. It's so weak.
We constantly evolve. I bet even now, let's say, well, I'm definitely a different person from when we started going out. You know, it's 10 years. I'm definitely evolved. Even you from August, September, is it? From that around time? I bet now even you are, there are things that I could repeat back to you maybe that you said in August, September, and you'd be like, don't necessarily agree with that now. Do you know what I mean? We constantly evolve, we constantly adapt, we constantly change, and both of you do. So therefore it's negating that. No, that's not the right word. It's
navigating.
That's the word. Yeah, it's navigating that and allowing each other the space and the kind of the time to evolve and make mistakes, or maybe say things, or not necessarily do things, because I don't agree with cheating, and me and you are both very much on this. You know, I think that there is allowances of people needing to speak about things or make mistakes in the way they say things, but I think when you go so far to jump in a bed with somebody else, you have no respect for the person you're with.
It's crossing a line, and I've from experience I've had that, you know, I've had a relationship then because I've been cheated on. One really bad one, but these, you know, that's now crossed the line. And when I actually, the last person that cheated on me, I don't even want to say, I won't say who, but the last person, it was, there was a point where I was like, can we work this out? And I was actually like, do you know what, no, because I don't like who I am anymore.
Yeah.
I don't like who I am around you. I don't feel safe around you.
Yeah.
I don't feel like you've got my back. I don't feel like you respect me. I don't, and without all of those key components, I used to be so, love conquers all. Oh, yeah. Princess story, everything will be fine, but it's not. You have to have the key components. You can love someone to death, but they could be destroying you. You can't stay with them. It will absolutely destroy you in your heart. And I've done it. Trust me. I've been with people and I've thought my heart's been in pieces, but there's not one thing about them that's been good for me as a person. There's been no respect for me. There's been no loyalty to me. You can't navigate through that because you're destroying yourself. And I felt like when I ended up leaving the last person that happened with, it changed something in me. I began to, for a while, I mean, it was three, four years ago now, there was a long period of time when I was getting into relationships and I could never sustain one because as soon as I got too close and I thought, I felt like I was being with them and I was trusting them and they were becoming a part of me, I had to end the relationship. And it was because it was too close again. You've got too close, I need to run. Which is strange because I normally have an attachment style and I would be like needy, but then I completely went to the opposite end of the scale. I became avoidant, which was like, oh, I'm all in, then I have to run. And so I've read a book on that called Attached. And it's about the attachment theory of adults, of, you know, what you've gone through as a kid, which was obviously where I got my attachment side from. But then going through the adult relationships where I got my avoidant bit from. So now I'm trying to go in the middle to find the right balance. And I've feel like lately I've been navigating that really well. But when someone does cheat on you, you have to be aware of yourself enough to know if you can still be the same person and still keep a relationship going, whether there was reasons for it in the background that you are aware that, okay, I've been messing up and I've not, you know, it's a very tricky line because I know some people that have got back together after and they've got the best relationship because something was unfixed in the first place. But you know, it is a level of respect that has gone, and I find that very, very difficult for someone to say to you, yeah, I respect you that little that I've done this. And it's not just about the physical act of having sex with someone else. To me, it's about my soul. Like I'm very open with relationships when I start them, and I say that I'm very deep, I talk a lot, I'm very aware of my mind, and I'm not one to just blank something over. I have to talk about it, and so they know the depth of how that has hurt me in the past. And I feel like when that level is crossed, I can't go back to you, because this is not just about that you physically had sex with someone. This is that you've known every deep part of my soul and you've set it on fire, and therefore you don't deserve to have that with me. And because I've learned the self-love, I can do that now. But like I said, it's very hard to get to that point, because you know, back in the day I would have just forgiven them. I'm like, I don't want them to leave me, I don't want to leave anyone. Whereas now you've got to be so sure of you'll still be heartbroken about this. Well, of course you will be, but
time heals.
But time heals, and also you've got to remember yourself and who you are and what you deserve. Because there's no love if someone doesn't respect you.
No, and it is. It comes so much down to respect and the emotions. You know, sleeping with someone isn't just physical. There's an emotional journey where you got to that point, whether it's a few texts, whether it was meeting up, whatever it was. You have chosen to either cut yourself off emotionally, to open yourself up emotionally to somebody else without thinking of the emotions of the other person. You have, whether people say it's subconscious or conscious, there is a level of you consciously made that decision.
Yeah.
And
they do. I spoke to my partner about this the other day, about men cheating and women cheating.
Yeah.
He was saying how for men in the past he's not been the most one, you know, well behaved.
He's not had a clean track record.
There we go, that's one. And he said for men that I know, and for myself, it is no like emotional to it. But then we kind of deciphered this conversation, because I've heard other men say this before, and I was like, no, what I think it is it's like a drug addict, when they need to get away from something, they'll go and do drugs. I think the reason why men have to do that is because it's a similar thing. And I think, you know, I know a lot of women that have cheated, but their thing was the same. They couldn't deal with the current emotion, so they take their stresses elsewhere. It's almost like a drug. And Russell Brand very eloquent about it when he talks about his sex addiction. It wasn't because he was, you know, wanting all these women and blah, blah, blah. It's a form of addiction.
It's a coping mechanism.
Taking your current mind off your current situation.
Yeah.
And you're completely getting lost in something that's giving you a moment pleasure.
Mm.
So you don't think of anything else. And that's why I'm saying about healing yourself is so important. Having a self-love is so important, because that's when you stop making these mistakes. And when you become aware of that, these mistakes stop happening and stop repeating on a cycle.
Mm.
Like, we all know men in our friendship groups or family groups or whatever that are constantly cheating.
Yeah.
And you're like, and then they're like, oh, I've lost everything again. She's left me. And it's like, well, what the frick did you expect, mate? Like, you keep doing the same thing.
You're not learning. You're not evolving. Outcome. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
So like, unless you take a look at yourself, you want a different outcome, well, do a different pattern. Like,
and it's the same.
That's stupid.
And although it hurts and it's brutal and it's just rank, it's the same for the person that's being cheated on. It's that same thing to stop those patterns of the person you're going for, the person that, you know, your self-worth, you are worth more. Anyone is worth more than going through that. And whether that's, like you just gave an example of a couple who got back together, whether that's having to go, look, this is stopped now. You have no respect for me. You're doing this, walking away. And that leading to them going and getting help and being self-aware and finding that out to stop that, and then being able to get back together and have a healthy relationship, that can happen. But until either one makes that, you know, makes that commitment to themselves and puts themselves first, that can't happen on either party.
Yeah, agree. That's exactly what it is. You have to have the self awareness, the self inventory.
Yeah.
To fix anything before, because if it's always constantly blaming the partner, I did this because of this, or this because of this. Let's both look at ourselves and then see where we're going wrong.
Yeah, without a doubt. It's complicated. Life's bloody complicated.
It's hard.
It's hard work.
But we are depicting it now to help us through each time.
And it's constant. You constantly learn and you're constantly put in situations where those tools are needed, and those, especially self-awareness, you're constantly tested to be self-aware and to look at your actions and what you're doing. Because some of us don't realize, you know, you can say something and have hurt someone and not realize, you know, and it's being self-aware and constantly evolving and learning of your surroundings, the people around you, what they're going through, what you're going through. It's a complicated little life that we all lead.
It is. And like, no one's had a run through of your life. Like, there's no practice round. There's no one that's lived in your exact shoes, even if it's your mum and you're very close with her. She doesn't live in your mind. She doesn't know that. So it's literally, it's just, we're working it out as we go along. It's a lesson each and every day. And we just take on the lesson and we learn it, or we don't, and we keep repeating it. And I think it's important for when these hard times do show up that we go, okay, what's this trying to teach me? And when you find out what it's trying to teach you, it doesn't become so hard anymore. Like, there's been times, you know, when I'm really stressed out with things and I'm like, I take a step back, I'm like, what am I learning from this? Okay, how not to do that again, or how my strength is here, or what I can do on this bit a bit differently. Them lessons are the most important things, because like I said, it's not a rehearsal. We've just got to go through it. There is no guidebook to it. There's people that have gone through things. Like, we can give all this advice all day long. We're not going through anyone else's shoes. What we are doing is saying, this has happened to us. If you've got something similar, maybe this helps you.
Yeah.
And like I said, when I pick up the things from Wim Hof or Gabby Bernstein or Tony Robbins or Mel Robbins, I'm learning from them and I can adapt that into my life.
Yeah. And all we're doing really is learning what they've been through and trying to see what they've learned and how that can apply to our own life and what we're going through.
Yeah.
And that's all any of us are really doing when we're having these conversations, is A, opening up the conversation so hopefully people can have it in their own households or in their own kind of party of friends or people around them, and also to just kind of maybe help with those first steps for people to look at their own situation, self-awareness, what they're going through.
I mean, we know from looking at these people that like self-help gurus and stuff that, okay, what we've learned is awareness changes things, so let's give that a go, and it just all leads, and it all, you know, I think everything happens for a reason and everything comes around because we've created it. And I know people might don't always agree with that, well, I didn't create this, but actually when I look at my own life from my own experience, every single thing was to the tiniest of decisions, the tiniest of choices, directly impacted the rest of my future.
Yeah.
So we take these little choices and we go, okay, what can I do differently with that, and see what outcome would be different? Because it is ultimately our lives, and it is no one else's responsibility. It is our own.
Exactly. And every decision has a reaction. You know, whether you feel like it's the kind of the easy decision or whether it's a hard decision, everything has a reaction and will impact you moving forwards.
Yeah. And one thing my nan always said was lazy people work the hardest. And that is so true, because I'm like, you know what, when I was couldn't be bothered to do that bit, I'd rather go and get drunk to deal with the emotions. It took me 10, 15 years to sort my head out. Whereas if I'd have looked back at myself then and thought, okay, my nephew's just died of meningitis, I'm 17 and I'm about to drop out of school because my mum's gone blind, I need to deal with this now and not 10 years later.
Yeah.
Christ, this would have been a lot sooner, this podcast, but like that.
It's tough, isn't it? It is. And we all run to things that aren't necessarily the most healing or the most helpful, but we're only human. And actually for us and for you, maybe 15 years ago, those tools weren't there, and that awareness hadn't been opened. And there wasn't that kind of, it was still very stigmatized, mental health, dealing with issues. It was a closed conversation. And at least we can look now and go, look, we might not be there yet, but we are actually in a lot more of a destigmatized and open kind of society.
Yeah. And that's why I love this pod, because it gives us the chance to talk about our experiences, but connect with people that may have similar or can use some of these tools to navigate through their life and their circumstances as well.
100%. There we are. I feel like we've come to a natural conclusion.
I do. That was a nice flow, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's lovely. Well, there you go.
Well, thanks everyone. We hope you've enjoyed our pod today.
Absolutely. We are hoping to maybe look at having our first guest soon, aren't we?
Yeah, and we've got some great people, like the people I read about, the people I use these tools from. I'm really hoping to get some of them on, because you know, these people are incredible, and these people have ultimately helped me get to where I am now in my own headspace. So to get some people on that could also give their wisdom to our listeners would also be fabulous.
Absolutely. We will be letting you all know that soon, so make sure to keep an eye out. Yay. Thanks guys.
That is all for this week, guys. Thank you so much for listening.
And we'd like to say a special thank you to Audio Boom for distributing the series, Raspberry Films for producing the series, and Dan Popple for our lovely, lovely theme tune. Thanks, guys.
Bye.
Can't wait to speak to you next week.